Okay, morning. So this morning we have a session about the interplay between superconductivity and topological insulators. So there are really sort of two issues here. One issue is what kind of can one have topologically non-trivial superconducting states? And the other issue is what happens when one combines superconductors with topological insulators and talks about the superconducting proximity effect. We have four talks this morning, and what I thought I would do is to sort of take advantage of my being the chair is to give a really brief introduction just to how Majorana fermions have shown up in this matter. So this is mainly for the experimentalists. I think there is probably all of these. So let me just
So I just want to sort of show how Majorana fermions have shown up, and so really this goes back to the sort of earlier days in the quantum Hall effect when Moore and Reed realized that by generalizing the Laughlin state, they came up with highly non-trivial states that supported quasi-particle excitations that had non-abelian excitations. And so basically the simple idea is that in the Laughlin state, one has abelian fractional statistics where if one interchanges two quasi-particles, one gets a complex phase, and that's something you can have in two dimensions. In the non-abelian states, when you interchange two quasi-particles, you get a non-abelian operation, and that can occur if the ground state in the presence of the quasi-particles has a degeneracy. Okay, and so in that degenerate space, then one can have a unitary operation which mixes the degenerate states, and that's a non-abelian statistics. Okay, and so one characterization of these non-abelian states is the so-called quantum dimension, which tells you how this this ground state degeneracy grows with the number of quasi-particles. And in the simplest case, where it's the Majorana, is this dimension is the square root of 2. So I think, in the early days, this paper was underappreciated for two reasons. First of all, because at the beginning, we didn't really have a clear idea what state this might apply to. And then the second problem is that there weren't very many people who could really understand it, at least not me. But
what about, as long as we're talking about history, what about transverse
theorizing? Sure, okay, that's right. So that's a... This is a very incomplete history. Okay. So
but it helps the students to understand.
Absolutely. So in the transverse field Ising model, one could do a Jordan Vigner type transformation, which turns it into Majorana fermions. Even the two-dimensional classical Ising model has a fermion representation, which is like Majorana fermions.
Exactly.
That's right. Okay. So two things happened which made this become much more interesting. One is that there was a realization more around, in the late 1990s, that the nu equals 5 halves quantum Hall state might be spin polarized, which means, yes?
Can you tell me what in this is the Majorana fermion?
It's going to be in the quasi-particle excitation. And so far, it's not Majorana necessarily yet, okay? But for the five halves, it is. And so there's this realization that these ideas might apply to the five halves quantum Hall effect. And at this point, that's still not completely settled yet. There's certainly lots of encouraging evidence. And then the second thing is that it was realized that there's a very simple limit where one can think about this, and one can understand a certain class of the non-abelian particles just by using free fermions. Okay, and free fermions are easier to understand than the more complicated analysis. And so what Reed and Green realized is that the more Reed state can be interpreted as a paired state of composite fermions. Okay, and so the simple problem that you can then study is the problem of a spinless superconductor in two dimensions. Okay, and because of the Pauli principle, the pairing has to be p-wave. And in order to, so you want to open up a gap everywhere. In order to, if you have a p-wave superconductor and you want to open up a gap everywhere on the Fermi surface, it has to be px plus ipy, because otherwise there'd be a node. Okay? And so this is a time reversal.
A possibility of s-wave, but all frequency.
Okay. All right. Well. All right. But in any case, so the natural state to consider is this time reversal symmetry breaking p plus ip state, and so this is a problem that one can solve by solving the Schrödinger, the Bogle-Lyubov-Dejean equation, or the Schrödinger equation, and so what one finds is that in the weak pairing phase, at least, that if you have a vortex and you solve the solve the Schrödinger equation in the core of the vortex, then there's a deep mathematical theorem which guarantees that there's a state exactly at zero energy in the vortex. Okay, and now when you solve the Bogle-Lyubov-Dejean equation, you go through a process where you first double the Hilbert space, because you have to do the sort of Nambu psi and psi dagger, so you sort of double it, and so the price you pay for that is that the states at positive and negative energy are redundant. Okay, so that adding a fermion to the positive energy state is the same operation as removing a fermion from the negative energy state. So the gammas and gamma daggers are related to each other. And so what this means, so every state has a partner, except the one at zero, which doesn't have a partner. And so this state at zero, which doesn't have a partner, is in a sense its own antiparticle. Gamma is equal to gamma dagger, which means that putting a fermion in there and taking it out is really exactly the same operation. So that's what a Majorana fermion is. And so So the Majorana fermion is predicted to exist in the core of the the quasi particle of the Moore Reed state. This has a Majorana as part of it. So this Majorana fermion is really sort of half of a state, right? Because this pair of states defines one fermionic state that can be either occupied or empty. And so that means if I have two of them, then two vortices defines a single fermionic state, which can be empty or full, and yet it's non-local. Okay, and so if one has 2n of these vortices, then the degeneracy is going to be 2 to the n. And so this is how you can understand this quantum dimension of the square root of 2, because every pair of vortices defines a two-level system. Yeah.
So this needs a half vortex, right?
H over 2e.
Yeah.
That's a,
Oh, it's an ordinary vortex.
For spinless.
For spinless.
Yeah, but it's H over 2e. It's the usual superconducting vortex. Exactly.
So not every p-wave superconductor would have a Majorana.
It has to be spinless. Yeah, so one has to be careful. If you're talking about, strontium ruthenate, where you have spin, it's really a triplet, then you need an H over 4e vortex. And so then you need to be able to separate the H over 4e vortices. But Yeah, so this is a very nice model, though, which one can understand, okay? And okay, so there's just one more thing I want to say about this, and so this is one of the sort of big ideas, I think, which was Alexei Kitaev's insight, which is to imagine that one has this ground state degeneracy if you have non-abelian particles, and his idea was to use that ground state degeneracy to store quantum information. Okay, and so the beauty of this is that since the states are sort of non-local in the quasiparticles, this quantum information is stored non-locally, which means that if you do a local measurement, you can't destroy the coherence of the state. Okay, and so these the quantum information which is encoded in these quasiparticles is protected. Okay, and only if you bring them together can you do a measurement. Okay, and moreover, if you can find a way of sort of braiding the quasiparticles around them each other, then one can do unitary operations on this state. And so for the Majoranas, it turns out you can't do all possible unitary operations. So you can't make a universal quantum computer out of the Majorana fermions. There are more exotic non-abelian states, like at 12/5, where maybe one can make a universal quantum computer. But I think just for now, it would be nice to do some of the operations. Okay, and so the idea then is that if you can prepare pairs of vortices, and if you can pull them out of the vacuum so that there are no fermions associated with each pair, Then you can somehow braid them around each other, and at the end you can figure out what the result of the operation is by then bringing the pairs back together, and then either there will be an extra fermion or not. Okay, and if you can detect whether or not there's an extra fermion on this pair, then you're measuring, you're measuring the result of this operation. Okay, and so, so this is the idea, and the question is just how one can implement this idea. And of course, this is the mission of QStation, and right now there's a big effort to try to make this happen for nu equals 5/2. Okay, and so one of the things we're going to hear about today is whether maybe there's an alternative to the quantum Hall effect. Okay, and so now let me turn it over to Liang, the first speaker, who's going to talk about how one might be able to realize this in a topological insulator.
Hello everyone, my name is Liang Fu, and I'd like to first thank the organizers for organizing this wonderful conference. And today...
Is the microphone on?
Is it on?
I think the microphone is just recording.
Okay, great. Oh. Okay. So today I'm going to talk about Majorana fermions on topological insulators. This is about a theoretical proposal to create, manipulate, and detect Majorana fermions in the solid state system using topological insulators. This work is done in collaboration with Charlie Kane. So we consider basically putting a S-wave superconductor on top of the topological insulator. So the motivation is the following. So we know that the surface states of topological insulators are non-trivial. In the simplest case, it has this Dirac cone, and at the Fermi surface, which is generally away from the Dirac point, each momentum has only one quantum state, and the spin at that momentum is polarized. So from the point of view of counting the number of states, the surface states of a topological insulator is sort of like a half of a normal two-dimensional metal, and it's like a spinless fermion. So we know that, we just heard from Charlie, that for a spinless fermion, in order to have a gapped superconductor, one possibility is to have a P plus I, PY pairing, because Pauli principle excludes the usual S-wave pairing. So this motivates us to look at what happens for the surface states of a topological insulator, where also at each momentum we have only one state. So we consider putting an S-wave superconductor on top of it. Due to the superconducting proximity effect described here, the surface state is to open up an energy gap. And in the rest of my talk, I'm going to show you how these superconducting state at the surface is non-trivial and it leads to Majorana fermions. So the bottom line is that in the two-dimensional spinless superconductor, it's because of this non-trivial pairing term that leads to Majorana fermions, whereas here the pairing term is conventional, but it's the free fermion part that is non-trivial and leads to Majorana fermions. One way we can already see is that at the Fermi surface of the topological insulator, if you go around the Fermi circle, the spin rotates continuously by 2 pi, and this leads to a quantized barrier phase, which is absent in the spinless fermions. So we know that in the two-dimensional P plus IP superconductor at the boundary, there is a chiral Majorana edge mode. Here, the system we have is time reversal invariant. The pairing occurs at k and minus k, the two acramous pairs. So we don't break time reversal, and there's no way we can get a chiral edge state. What we can do is putting a superconductor near a magnet. Both are deposited on top of the topological insulator. And at this interface, there will be a gapless one-dimensional chiral Majorana bound states. So one way you can see this happens is to look at the Bogoliubov-Dejean equation. And let's say this is y direction at ky equal to 0. This term describes the free fermion part, the surface direct points. And this part describes the superconducting order parameter here. And this term describes the magnet. So these two terms basically open the energy gap. If one look at this Hamiltonian, one realizes that there are basically four bands, and I'm going to focus on the bands as near energy zero. And in that case, it's actually just a straightforward exercise to see that the two states are like one-dimensional direct fermions, and the mass term basically changes sign across this interface. And that leads to a zero energy bound state at the interface. This occurs at ky equals 0, and if ky is away from 0, the zero energy states disperse along this ky direction, and that leads to chiral Majorana edge modes. And one thing I'd like to emphasize is that the BDG Hamiltonian sort of artificially doubles the degree of zero freedom, so really the positive energy states and negative energy states describe the same excitation.
So in this case, if you change the phase of superconductor, is there any change in the spectrum? Or
No, because in here, I have only one superconductor.
Yeah,
so I don't need to talk about
it. Wouldn't it use some kind of like this rotation of the spin state of this edge current, this bound current?
The spin state of this?
Yes.
The Majorana fermion doesn't, spin is not a good quantum number here. The surface state has spin orbit coupling, so spin is not a good quantum number.
But something is changed.
Yeah, something, because if you think, something.
Yeah, if you think the other side has another superconductor.
I haven't put that in, I'll do that in a minute. Okay. Okay, so I just described the one-dimensional Majorana edge states, and now we want to have Majorana bound states, localized Majorana fermions. And the way to do that, we have two ways of doing that. One is at the surface of a topological insulator, and we put a vortex, an H/2E vortex. And we solve the BGG equation, and you can see here that there's a zero-energy bound state localized at this vortex core. And the spectrum is particle hole symmetric, which means that zero energy state is robust. It cannot move up or down. And we check that it's a Majorana state satisfying the quasi-particle operator is real. And in fact, one can show that this existence of these Majorana bound state is a robust property. It doesn't depend on the minimum model that I introduced before. It's a direct consequence of the pi barrier phase and the fact that you have only half degrees of freedom at the surface of topological insulator.
Excuse me. So it's like vortex is like rolling up the ferromagnetic medium into a very small size.
You can think, one way you can think about it is that, yeah. So Another way of achieving a Majorana bound state is to consider a two-dimensional quantum spin Hall insulator, and we know that there will be one-dimensional direct fermion at the edge. And by putting a magnet and a superconductor, we get a Majorana bound state. And in this case, there's no ky, there's no y direction, so it's a bound state. And the next question is how to turn these theoretical calculations into something that one can possibly measure. So to do that, we considered the following geometry. We put two superconductors on top of the topological insulator, and by tuning the superconducting phases, one can get different kinds of excitation spectrums. And I'm going to show you that the one-dimensional channel that's in between the two superconductors are sort of like a one-dimensional wire for Majorana fermions. So, so by solving the BDG Hamiltonian, we get the excitation spectrum for different superconducting phase differences. So the blue curve is for the superconducting phase difference equal to pi. In this case, we have time reversal symmetry, and this leads to a two-fold degeneracy at Q equals zero. At Q equals zero, and when you are away from the superconducting phase difference pi, there will be an energy gap. So basically, the one-dimensional channel is like a non-chiral 1D Majorana fermion gas, and the gap can be tuned by the superconducting phase differences.
What if you have this, you know, dirt in this one-dimensional channel?
What if you have dirt? Okay, that's a good question. So even if you have dirt. Then I cannot use momentum.
Is there some kind of Anderson theory for this case, or
this will be an open question? Correct? This will be an open question. Usually in the 1D system, when you have dirt, everything becomes localized. But in this case, as you tune the superconducting phase across pi, there must be an extended state. I'm actually going to show you why that is the case. So the point is that when phase difference is equal to pi, there has to be an extended state.
The transport in the end come out exactly the same as the quantum spin or state that was discussed yesterday.
So what kind of transport? This Majorana fermion doesn't carry charge.
No. What I'm saying is that, well, you can still.
So one possibility is to measuring the thermal conductance along this one-dimensional channel, and the prediction is that the thermal conductance is quantized in this way. So.
Very hard experiment.
Yeah. Very hard. No. It's easier said than done, right? Right. Exactly. Sure.
Just to understand about the last case. I mean,
sure.
If the phi is uniform everywhere, then phi. I know that as phi equal to pi, somehow you have time reversal and protect that crossing. But if I have these two superconductors, then in general the phi can rotate. So in that case. I can rotate from pi to zero.
I'm going to show you how you can tune the superconducting phases in a minute.
If the phi is not uniform spatially.
Well, if phi is not.
If it rotates from pi to zero, then there will be a state that's localized in the region where it's rotating.
Yeah, just mean whether in that case. This crossing only depends on the asymptotic behavior of the phi.
Yeah, it only depends on what happens far away here and far away here. Yeah, it's a general thing. That can set up a phase difference. Actually, I'm going to say that in a minute. All right. Yeah. Okay. So starting from these the line junctions, one gets chiral Majorana fermion moving in one dimension, and now we want to do something to localize the Majorana fermions. And that requires three superconductors. So here are three superconductors deposited on top of the topological insulator, and in the parameter space, I have superconducting phases phi 1 and phi 2, and we find a large region where Majorana bound states exist. So one way you can think about it is that this is like a discretized vortex. So in a continuous vortex, the superconducting order parameter continuous 1 by 2 pi. And here, I only have three superconductors. But let's say the superconducting phase are 0, 2 pi, 3, 4 pi, 3. That's as if you have a vortex. And that's what we find by an exact solution. And moreover, the only way the Majorana fermions can be disjoint is when the two neighboring superconductors has a phase difference close to pi. In that case, the one-dimensional channel becomes gapless, as I showed in the previous slide. In that case, the Majorana bound states becomes delocalized along this one-dimensional channel, and eventually it's going to be.
So that's how we know that it has to be there has to be a delocalized
state. Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So building on these line junctions and tri junctions, I'm going to show you how we can move Majorana fermions around. So this device geometry consists of two tri-junctions connected by a line junction. So each of these regions are superconductors with its own superconducting phases. And we can start from this superconducting phase configuration. And in this case, there is no Majorana fermions around. And by tuning this superconducting phase difference across pi for these two superconductors, one can go through a transition where two Majorana bound states appear. And this is the schematic picture, and this is the solution of the BDG equation. You start from here, where there's no degenerate states, there's no Majorana fermions, and you tune the superconducting phases across pi. You find that there are two degenerate states. One corresponds to zero fermion for these two Majorana fermions, and the other state corresponds to one fermion. So there's two degenerate states associated with two Majorana fermions. And if you start from here and you tune these phases adiabatically, you are guaranteed to end up in one particular state. And here is another possibility where I have one Majorana fermion, and by tuning superconducting phases, I can make it delocalize along this channel and eventually to move it from one end to the other end. And this device geometry will also give us a way to measure the fermion state associated with Majoranas. So when the two Majorana fermions are fused, if you go along this direction, if they fuse to the ground state, the supercurrent flows in one particular direction vertically. And if the two Majorana fermions are in the excited state with one more fermion, this quasi-particle state is occupied, and the supercurrent in this direction is flipped. So the two states differ in supercurrent. That's, in principle, a measurable quantity.
How do you set the phase?
I'm going to say it in a minute. Yeah, that's a very good question.
What's the question?
How do you set the phase of the
current? Right.
That's both set the phase and measure the current.
Exactly. But let me emphasize, one difference from the usual Johnson junction is that in usual Johnson junction, once you set up the superconducting phase, the current is determined, in the simple case, is sine phi. So the current, the supercurrent, is determined by the superconducting phase difference. In this case, it's not. There are two possibilities, right? Depending on which state you are in, for a given superconducting phase, you have two possibilities, supercurrent in two directions.
Can I have phase leaps?
That's another question that should be taken into account, right?
And the long junction.
Yeah.
So does this fermion carry a spin?
Does this fermion?
You added a fermion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you are in this state, you created a fermion.
So it has a spin.
Spin is not a good quantum number. Right. Okay.
Carries fermion number, full stop.
Okay. So now I'm going to show you how we can exchange two Majorana fermions, which in principle can probe the non-abelian statistics. So we start from a honeycomb array of superconductors. I start with each superconductor has a uniform phase, let's say zero. And now I'm going to increase the superconducting phase here and decrease the superconducting phase here, let's say to 2 pi over 3 and minus 2 pi over 3. What that does, that produces two vortices, and each vortice carry Majorana bound states. And now I can do the same thing over here. And since the two Majorana fermions are created from the ground states, they're guaranteed to be in the state 0. And now what I can do is I can increase the superconducting phases here. What that's going to do is that's going to make the two vortices move around. So we know that when the vortex moves around in the loop, the superconducting phases enclosed by the loop increases by 2 pi. Now we're doing the inverse thing. If we can increase the superconducting phases by 2 pi in this central island, the two vortices will move clockwise. And after the phase increases by 2 pi, the two Majorana fermions get exchanged. So we are going back to here. And however, the cool thing about non-abelian statistics is that when the two Majorana fermions are exchanged, the system is not in the original state you start with. It goes into a different state. In this case, it's the rule for exchanging Majorana fermions gives us this state. It's in the sort of a EPR-like states. And when you fuse these two Majorana fermions, that gives two possibilities. The the fermion status here can be either 0 or 1, and they have obvious supercurrent. And here, it's the same thing. They have probably one half of being 0 and one half being 1, but the results that you get will be perfectly correlated. So if you get 0 here, you're guaranteed to get 0 here. So that, in principle, can probe the Majorana non-abelian statistics.
Wait, then those two states are opposite the supercurrent circulation or not?
So 0 is supercurrent flowing in this direction. 1 will be supercurrent flowing in this opposite direction.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So I discussed this in Charlie the other day, but so seeing these two pictures from the vortex is actually grating.
Yeah.
So it seems like there are 5 plaquettes with non-zero flux. Is that right?
5.
I
think so, yeah.
So there, it seems like if for a closed surface, there must be another plaquette which has flux coming out of it, right? So the total flux adds to 0?
So the total flux, basically, I'm not doing anything to these superconducting phases.
So what are the fluxes of those 5 plaquettes?
So here it will be like 2 pi over 3, right? Here it will be like minus 2 pi over 3. So you see. So basically these two are basically plus vortices and these two are minus vortices. So in total, the total vorticity is 0. And you see, it has to be 2 plus vortices because then they're not the same Majorana particles.
No, there's a plus and minus sign.
No. This is plus, this is minus.
Yeah.
This is plus, this is minus.
Red and blue is in plus and minus. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's right.
But you've gone from 4 to 5.
4 to 5. Which one? This one?
Is it a coloring problem or something like that?
No, then you're changing the phases, right?
If you ignored the vortices, then I think what Taylor was pointing out is that you have a net flux through the...
So the color, these two, one, this is plus, this is minus.
The colors of the hexagons are not adding up. In those pictures, at least.
Maybe you only have a vortex if you have all three colors going around a point.
No, but we're just counting the number of colors of the hexagons. You've got two pale ones and two dark ones there. You've got the
No, this one, okay. So I'm basically increasing the phase. So from this graph to this graph, I'm increasing the supernatural phase of this island. That's why it goes through, you know, this color to this color and to this color and back.
Right, and when you're in the middle, if you look at the bottom left,
yes,
you have more of the dark color than the light color.
That's not the flux.
That's the phase going all the way around.
The phase difference is, and figuring out what the current is.
That's the phase.
So, yeah. Right.
You're changing the current pattern when you do that.
Right. Yeah. So now, going back to the question of how to do this in reality, you can imagine it's already hard to do in PowerPoint. Okay. So I'm going to first give you the good news. So the good news is that there is this experiment more than 10 years ago. These people look at niobium, bismuth antimony, niobium junctions. So niobium is a superconductor, and we know bismuth antimony is a topological insulator. From the He-Hassan's experiment. So these people look at this geometry where you have two superconductors on top of the topological insulator, and they set up, they observed a supercurrent, basically. And the supercurrent is shown here. So this gives us evidence that there's a good contact between niobium and the bismuth antimony. So
what's the X?
This X?
No, X.
The alloy is below, I believe it's around 4%, so it's really not a semiconductor. It's a semi-metal. So there could be supercurrent flowing in the bulk as well. But
the surface is a much better conductor than the bulk is.
Right, and also the information that I want to convey here is that there's a good proximity effect between niobium and bismuth antimony, and that's experimentally demonstrated. So
what was the gap, the spacing? Sorry, maybe it was on that.
Sure.
What's D?
The distance here, let's see, it's 0.6 micron. It's pretty large.
Yeah, one of them is that and one of them is twice that.
Exactly, yeah, twice that. So there are still many challenges. Finding a topological insulator and finding a superconductor that makes good contact with it. It used to be that when I made this PowerPoint a few days ago, the only thing we have is bismuth, antimony, and niobium. And now, thanks to the Heisk experiment, we have a new candidate, bismuth selenide. And the other thing is to when we set up this line junction, we want to have discrete Andre bond state. We don't want the junction to be too long. Then in that case, there'll be many low-lying electronic excitations. In this case, the good news is that bismuth selenide has a very small Fermi surface, and that helps. Going back to your question, how to set up the superconducting phases, that's to me, that's the most difficult part. One possibility is to connect all these superconducting islands to a parent superconductor and tuning the phase differences by threading a magnetic flux, a magnetic solenoid. In principle, that's the way I can imagine now, but I think maybe some experimentalists in the audience have more clever ways of doing that. And finally, one has to be able to measure the current difference when Majorana fermions are fused. And notice, please, that this is a supercurrent. So, so we think about it, and we think, so what's the smoking gun? So one, what's the sort of the first step to do? One possibility is to use three superconductors, set up this Y junction, and passing these currents to set up the appropriate phase difference. Then there will be a Majorana bond state. One possible way to detect this Majorana bond state is to put an STM tip and do tunneling. So in that case, there will be a zero bias conductance peak with a Lorentzian shape, and the Schott noise that you get is E. So basically, it signals that the single electron tunneling process.
And even tunneling into the line junction when it's a pi.
Exactly, exactly. Then that will be the probe these low-lying states.
Yeah, exactly.
So so we also look at how Majorana fermions can show up in the two-dimensional quantum spin Hall insulators. So,
do you have any estimate of the magnitude of supercurrent?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. So let me go back to, let's see. So let's see how do I do this. So basically, when the so when you have this this junction, right? So you have two Majorana fermions. They can be either in state zero and state one. The difference in the supercurrent is roughly E times delta zero. So it's electron charge times the superconducting gap. So, okay. So, so in this two-dimensional geometry, we put two superconductors, and they're mediated by a quantum spin Hall insulator. At zero magnetic field, we know from we know that experimentalists demonstrated that for short quantum spin Hall insulator junctions, the conductance is E squared is for each channel is E squared over H. And here, time reversal symmetry forbids elastic backscattering. And now, if we consider the interface between this edge and a superconductor, in this case, we will have perfect Andre backscattering. So normally, you have both Andre backscattering and a normal backscattering, but time reversal symmetry forbids elastic backscattering. So we are only left with perfect Andre backscattering. So that leads to a doubling of the conductance. So so now if we put two superconductors, that's a Jostling junction, and this is the quasi-particle Andre bond state spectrum in this junction. So at zero field, both at zero and non-zero field, you see that there has to be this crossing here. The Andre bond states that they cross. And what this means is that it leads to a fractional Jostling effect. So this idea of this fractional adjustment effect is originally proposed by Kitaev for a one-dimensional spinless fermion model, and this quantum spin Hall insulator provides a physical realization of this idea. So basically, let's start when the superconducting phase differences are zero. All these negative energy states are occupied, and as I slowly increase this, the superconducting phase difference. You will see that the quasi-particle sort of move in this way, and after a phase difference increases by 2 pi, you end up in a state, in an excited state. You do not return to the ground state. Those two states are sort of like the 1 and the 0 state associated with two Majorana fermions. They differ in fermion parity. And what this means is that there's a 4 pi periodicity of energy versus the phase difference. And that also leads to a 4 pi periodicity of the supercurrent. And I'm going to show you how we can understand this conceptually in a simple way. So we know that if we have a two-dimensional quantum spin Hall insulator and we put it in a cylindrical geometry, there will be edge states. There will be spin up and spin down, non-chiral edge states related by time reversal. And we start, let's say, zero flux inside the cylinder. And every state has a time reversed partner. And let's say they're both occupied. And now I increase the magnetic flux through this cylinder. What happens is that the right moving states and left moving states shift up and down in energy, so that when the flux is exactly equal to pi to h over 2e, you have one unpaired fermions. So I start with no Cramer's degeneracy. After I thread a flux h over 2e, I have a Cramer's doublet, and this change, basically there's a change in Cramer's degeneracy, or in other words, there's a change in fermion parity. The fermion number mod 2. So when now.
Sorry, phi 0 is h over e?
Phi 0 is h over e, exactly. Yeah. So now if I put a superconductor that covers the edge of this quantum spin Hall insulator, and I can set up a phase difference by threading a magnetic flux here. And when the magnetic flux is h over 2e, the phase difference goes back to 2 pi. And yet, there is this fermion parity transfer still occurs. And the way it shows up is that the junction, it becomes in the excited state that I showed in its previous slide, right? So as you, in here, it's 2 pi correspond to h over 2e. And you start here, and you end up here in the excited states.
One question about the amplitude. So sure. You have this cosine phi over 2 term.
Right, in this, yeah.
The 4 pi periodicity.
Yes.
And on the other hand, you also have the normal term come from the superfluid energy, which is 5 pi.
That's right.
This is just one state, so will this dominate by...
But in a short junction, basically... In the limit of short junction, the Andre bound state inside the superconducting gap contributes most to the supercurrent. In fact, the supercurrent is dominated by the Andre bound state in the limit of short Johnson junction. This is work done by, I think, Purosaki. Okay, So this fermion parity transfer, as I increase the superconducting phase by 2 pi, leads to measurable signatures. One way we can measure this is to consider a ring geometry where the superconducting phase difference is set up by the magnetic flux, and basically we have a geometry where there's a junction in the ring. And sitting at one fixed superconducting phase difference, there are two branches of supercurrent because of this. There are basically two low-lying states. And to make a transition between the two different states, the fermion parity has to be changed. That can occur at finite temperature due to the thermally activated quasi-particle. Basically, quasi-particles can interact with the Andre bound state in the junction and emit a phonon. This kind of inelastic process can switch the supercurrent. But at low temperature, this probability becomes exponentially suppressed. And that leads to this telegraph noise of the supercurrent. And that's an equilibrium system, and the supercurrent can be measured inductively. And if we connect this system to external electrodes, one can consider a voltage bias Johnson junction. And in this case, we apply a small DC voltage, and so that superconducting phase difference is increasing time. This kind of basically after 2 pi period, you're not in the original state. Only after a 4 pi period, you go back. So that leads to a Johnson frequency that is half of the usual Johnson frequency. So I think I'm going to end here. And we have heard a lot from these Q meeting people in the last weekend how we can find Majorana fermions in five halves. So here we consider a different possibility. So, okay, thank you.
This suggestion with the squid, when you put magnetic field, don't you destroy the spin
part?
So basically, the edge states when you put magnetic field.
Oh, but you mean.
What is the suggestion to put magnetic field and to measure?
I think you're talking about this, right?
Yes.
So in this case, the crossing doesn't depend on magnetic field. In fact, the effect of magnetic field is to sort of make the ideal bound state decouple in energy from the continuum state. So in this case, you know, if you apply a voltage, and let's say you get a vacuum loop, basically the polyparticle's energy is at a vacuum moving, and when you are moving here, basically you hit the continuum spectrum. That leads to dissipation. So in this case, there's always an energy gap.
Another way of saying it is that once you put the superconductor and the magnet on, you have an energy gap. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's putting on a weak magnetic field doesn't destroy that energy gap. So it's more robust than the quantum spin Hall effect.
Yeah. How about that crossing in the middle there? I mean, is there some process that they can?
Yeah. Basically, okay. if you have a thermally excited quasi particle, and they can switch the fermion pair.
The two states that are crossing have different numbers of fermions, one, two, and a different fermion parity. So.
The fermions conserved.
You need an odd number of fermions to connect those two.
And that's an inelastic process.
So what prevent fermions coming from other places?
The energy gap.
Energy gap. Uh-huh.
And that's the same problem facing all these proposals for topological quantum computation. Yeah. So if you have Majorana fermions locally, but there's always an energy gap, finite temperature. There are always inelastic processes. Thermally excited quasi-particle from the bulk can screw up the Majorana zero mode. But the protection is at low temperature. This process is exponentially suppressed.
Well, yeah, and you know, so Shankar Dasarma in the quantum Hall effect, he quotes 10 to the minus 30, right? So we should have a bigger.
In the magnet superconductor junction.
Yes.
Essentially, when you have this edge mode, that's the only edge mode,
right?
There is no actual, say, supercurrent
Well, supercurrent is all right. I think supercurrent.
Will there be supercurrent in the superconductor side?
I'm just talking about the quasi particle spectrum.
Yeah.
For superconductor, there's always a superconducting phase. That's all the time. That's a bosonic all the time. So everything I'm saying here is about the fermionic part.
So if you were to try to detect it from a thermal conductivity measurement,
yes.
Right? So and if there is only if the only energy carrying mode is the Majorana, then you would make contribution from the Majorana. So but if there is also the charged quasi-particle.
There's no the other excitation. The other quasi-particle excitations has an energy gap. And if the only gapless quasi-particle excitation at the edge are these Majorana edge states.
I think I'm sort of thinking more from the people's side, the superconductor context.
Yeah.
There you also have a Majorana mode at the edge,
yes.
But you also have the whole charge, whole quasi-particle that actually carry charge. So the proposals for measuring, detecting the edge current in a people's IP superconductor, we're relying on the fact that you will actually have a charge current.
I think you're talking about five halves, right?
Right. I'm just wondering if in your setting, will there be any charge carrying current on the superconducting side as well, or if there is only only transport is through the Majorana fermion?
I think my statement is there's no quasi particle excitations. There's no low energy quasi particle excitations that carry charge. The superconductor itself.
It's S wave, right? The superconductor is S wave.
Right,
there's no edges on that.
But I have a feeling that the phonons will completely swamp itself.
For thermal conductivity.
Yeah.
Thermal.
In the real world, you always need a voice.
I didn't say thermal conductors until somebody asked.
This is got a micro.
I wasn't. Can you comment about the effect of phase
lift?
Can you comment about the effect of phase lift?
Let's see.
Of a what?
Phase lift. It's a Joseph conjunction. You can have a phase lift.
Right, that leads to dissipation. So that's a quick answer.
Mm-hmm.
That leads to dissipation. Yeah, that's a quick answer.
But is it not protected against that? Or,
protected by the superconductor.
Yeah.
velocity. But
no, hypergeometric conjunction.
Well, no, I know, but if you make the critical current big enough, it's not going to happen. Strong does jump.
Okay, so next up we have Taylor Hughes. He's going to tell us, I guess, about a combination of both superconducting proximity effects and topological superconductors.
First, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to the conference. I was a late addition, so I appreciate them letting me in. And thanks for also letting me give this talk. So I'll be discussing my collaborative work on the time reversal invariant topological superconductors. And at the end of the talk, sort of in the spirit of this conference, we sort of have a nice way to organize a lot of the work that Liang Fu has and Charlie Kane have done on the proximity effect and the stuff we've done on magnetic domain walls in these systems, and so I'll just present that. It's not really anything particularly new, but it's just a nice organizational picture of it. And this work was done in collaboration with Xiaoliang Qi, who's here, Srinivas Raghu, who's a postdoc at Stanford, and my advisor, Shouchen Zhang, and there's a preprint reference. So first, we'll start off with something that probably most of you are familiar with, at least in some context, and this is the chiral topological superconductor. So this system, the spinless system, has this following BDG Hamiltonian. There's a kinetic energy term, a chemical potential, and then a P-wave pairing term. And so it turns out this system has two different phases. There's a weak pairing phase where, in this case, it's parameterized when mu is greater than zero. In this case, the system is topologically non-trivial. And there's a strong pairing phase when mu is less than zero and does not sit in the conduction band. And in this case, the system is topologically trivial. And the nice thing about this system is that in the non-trivial case, there is a robust chiral edge state, and the vortex core contains Majorana zero modes. This has been discussed already this week. So how can we see the system is topologically non-trivial? Well, you can rewrite the BDG Hamiltonian in the following form. So you can rewrite it as some vector dA, which depends on K, times the Pauli matrices. And the vector dA has the following form. It's basically kx in the x component, ky in the y component, and this kinetic energy term in the z component. Okay, so there's two different regimes here, like we talked about. There's the case when mu is less than zero, and when mu is less than zero, the z component is positive everywhere. So mu is less than zero, so the k squared is positive, and in that case, the minus mu is positive. And so if you look in the sort of Berlin zone picture, or at least in k space, you'll see if you plot the z component of this vector, it's pointing up everywhere. So this has like a ferromagnetic texture in the Berlin zone. And so this is the case when it's topologically trivial. And the other case, when it's non-trivial, is when mu has the opposite sign. So in this case, if mu is positive, there's some point or some ring in K-space where this thing vanishes. And where this thing, and outside this ring, it actually switches sign. And so what you see is in this case, there's a skirmionic texture where the Z component is negative in the center, and then as you go out towards the edges of the zone, flips sign somewhere. And the X and Y components point along the K directions, and so you'll see it has this winding around in this direction. So this has a non-zero skirmion charge, and this is why you can calculate some non-trivial topological invariant from this span structure, or from this energy spectrum. Okay, so what's nice about this system, it has a chiral Majorana edge state. And so what you have is you have the bulk superconducting gap, so the only the states above E equals zero are physical, and you have, like we saw in Liang's slides, a single, or in this case, just a chiral propagating Majorana state. The states below E equals zero are related to this state, and so they're not really physical states, just a redundancy. And these states are chiral Majorana states, which are also, in high energy literature, called Majorana Weyl states. Okay. If you put a vortex in the system, this is the spinless system, you will see that you get a Majorana on a zero mode in the vortex core, exactly at E equals zero. The field operator of this mode satisfies this property, which is why it's called Majorana. The particle is its own antiparticle. And as has been beautifully presented, these vortices can exhibit non-Abelian statistics. Okay. So what we've discussed, these chiral superconductors, which are time reversal breaking, so the P plus IP superconductor breaks time reversal symmetry, and you can define a chirality. This is the superconductor correspondence of the quantum Hall insulator. So the quantum Hall insulator has a single chiral fermionic mode, not a Majorana mode, and in this case, the states above and below equal zero are physical. We've heard a lot in this conference about the, whoops, didn't mean to go that fast to the end. So we've heard a lot in this conference about the quantum spin-off effect, and so the obvious question that people have asked is what's the superconducting analog? So I believe this is first written down by Rahul in a preprint in 2006, and we also, like I said, our work was about this superconductor. So this is a helical superconductor, which has sort of Majorana edge states, which propagate in both directions. So this is the this is not the chiral Majorana fermion, this is the typical Majorana fermion you see in high-energy physics. And just to distinguish the two, we call this a helical Majorana in line with the helical edge states. But in reality, it's just a full physical Majorana fermion. So you can imagine this in its simplest incarnation, like the quantum spin-off effect. You have P plus IP pairing for spin up, P minus IP pairing for spin down. And there's the time reversal symmetry is required. It protects you from opening this gap in the Majorana modes, just like in the quantum spin-off effect, because backscattering is prohibited. And if you add, say, S-wave pairing, which will mix the spins, in this case, it's still stable. This is like adding some extra spin orbit coupling terms in the quantum spin effect, and everything is still stable in this case. Okay. So like I said, this was also presented in Rahul's work in 2006. So something neat we showed is that, in this case, the vortex will contain two Majorana fermions. So it contains sort of an up Majorana fermion state and a down Majorana fermion state, which are related by time reversal symmetry. And if time reversal symmetry is preserved completely, so for example, if this is either a pi flux focused to one plaquette, so the vortex preserves time reversal symmetry, or it's a sort of a defect in the superfluid system, then the actual modes will be exactly degenerate at E equals zero. So something interesting we notice is that if you look at the time reversal properties of these two Majorana fermions, you can figure out that time reversal acting on gamma up gives you gamma down, and gamma down gives you minus gamma up. And so the interesting thing is that this operator here changes sign under time reversal symmetry. Okay? So this operator is basically the typical type of mass operator you can add to couple these two fermions, and you see it's odd under time reversal symmetry. So if it's multiplied by a constant and you conserve time reversal symmetry, this term is actually forbidden, which is why this system is protected by time reversal symmetry. The other interesting thing is that this operator here is actually related to the fermion number, the local fermion number. So it turns out that if you have two Majorana fermions on a vortex, you can create one complex fermionic state. Okay, so you combine the two Majorana fermions in a way to create one complex fermionic state, and this state can either be occupied or unoccupied. And so it turns out that if you look at the time reversal transformation locally here, what happens is that if you act with the time reversal transformation, the state goes from being occupied to unoccupied. So the local fermion number parity changes sign under this operation. And so the time reversal transformation connects a bosonic state to a fermionic state, which is what we call this a discrete supersymmetry. That's sort of just semantics, but it's related to Witten's supersymmetric quantum mechanics. It's not like a physical space-time supersymmetry. So a sort of nice picture you can imagine is that for a typical superconducting system, you can have a vortex, an antivortex, and they combine to form either the vacuum or Cooper pairs. They fuse always to form a bosonic state. And so this is a sort of typical Feynman diagram. You imagine fusing two vortices and getting out the vacuum or some bosonic system. What's interesting about this is if you take a time reversal invariant vortex here in this doubled system, the P plus IP, P minus IP system, and take a time reversed version of this thing, this time reversed version is actually its super partner. So when you fuse these two things, you always get a fermion out. This is like these things carry a super current, in effect. So if you fuse these two vortices, this is just, you're guaranteed to get a fermion out in that case.
How do you excite a time reversal reverse partner vortex?
I mean, in principle, they have to just be thermally excited. I mean, and it's not clear that these are the lowest energy excitations, but I mean, it's I mean, it's not trivial to create a vortex in its time reverse partner.
So you can't nucleate a plus minus vortex pair out of the vacuum.
I mean, in principle, that's what you do, but you have to add a fermion and then nucleate them would probably create this. So if you started off and if you had a ground state and you excite one quasiparticle and nucleate a vortex, it could be that quasiparticle now becomes shared between these two vortices. The vortex pairs.
So what if you don't add a fermion and you try to?
Then you would
try to use in principle, there you won't get the part a vortex and its complete time reverse partner.
Can I have a comment about this type of vortex? I mean, this is a little bit different system, but for three-dimensional helium 3B, there has been some proposal that there's a phase transition that's detected by an MR and rotating system can be actually explained by having a vortex with spin current circulation. So.
But that's different from this.
He's talking about
diverse odds
vortex.
Yeah. Time was even. Yeah.
He said, but
the two are related to each other through a time reversal.
You only bridge the time horizon inside the car to leave the difference between the two states.
Yeah, so in principle, it's like having superfluid with vorticity up or vorticity clockwise for spin up and counterclockwise for spin down. It's a time reversal invariant defect.
So is it that each vortex has two states?
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah,
so that just means that the state of the first vortex isn't going to be exactly the time reversal, the state of the other.
That's right.
If you don't add a fermion, then you create two vertices and they are not.
So it's not that you can't create it. It's just when you create it, they won't be in.
That's right. Time reversal. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, and in that case, you're not guaranteed to get the fermion, the fermion out in that case when you fuse.
You're guaranteed not to.
Yeah.
So you won't naturally expect this, say, near the transition or anything like that.
I'm not saying anything about how these vortices are popped out at
so
their critical
so the
point.
The challenge is how do you prepare the two vortices to be exactly time reversed?
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So this vortex locally breaks T, so it's not the same vortex as you talked about in the previous slide.
No, I mean, it. In principle, if it's a single flux through a single plaquette, it doesn't break T. It's one vortice for spin up, one vortice for spin down.
So now you're talking about a spread out vortex that breaks T. Is that
right? Or vortex pinned to a magnetic.
Yeah, vortex pinned to a magnetic impaired. Okay. Yeah, that's right. And so then that's right. I mean, this is sort of just a nice picture. I'm not proposing this for any type of experimental measurement.
Is this a pre-formula in such a system?
I'm sorry?
So three formulas
are I have, but I have low energy Majorana modes, right?
Yeah,
can you mean
you fuse the two vortices kind of quasiparticle?
Yeah, but I mean, as you fuse the vortices, their energy, their, as you get them closer together, their Majorana states will combine with each other and form a gap and get pushed to the quasiparticle gap, right? Just like a normal fusing. There's an exponentially decaying energy scale or energy gap between the Majorana modes, and as you bring the vortices closer together, they will fuse, and the quasiparticle will end up in the excited state.
So in that sense, that means if I have two vortices pinned to some magnetic field, and it's like this, and you fuse them, you get a boson, and in the other case, you do this and you fuse them, you get a fermion, and in the latter case, you need to cost energy, so it means these two vortices are repulsive to each other.
It's like spin. I mean, these vortices are still chiral in spin current, so it's like, in some sense, if you want Jack's time reversal, I mean, you have to think about other vortex with a spin current flowing.
No, spin current is time reversal even.
Yeah.
That's the reason why the vortex itself doesn't break time.
Okay, so as Shelley mentioned, there's another way to sort of imagine something physical out of this. So you can imagine two P plus IP vortices as being connected through some P wave wire. So this means that the two ends are correlated, so you have some Majorana fermion here and some Majorana fermion here. And from the work of Kataev, we know that the P wave wire also has two zero modes on the end of a P wave wire. And if you change something here, effectively it travels through the whole P wave wire and can affect the other end. And in this case, you just imagine you have a double P wave wire with two Majorana bound states on each end, one for spin up and one for spin down. And you can imagine the following. So that's just a heuristic picture. So you can imagine the following experiment. So start off with these vortices pinned to some classical magnetic moments. So you're actually breaking time reversal symmetry at each point, and it may be in different directions for these four vortices. So you have vortex 1 pinned to some local magnetic field, which breaks its time reversal in some way, and 2, 3, and 4 also in that way. So the key thing is if you flip now one of these magnetic moments, there's some long-range correlation between these vortices, because what happens here is you flip this, so the fermion parity changes around this point, but the whole system can't change fermion parity. So something has to happen on near the other states as well. So you flip one spin, the fermion parity changes, and
flip the spin?
You can take, so this is a, so I'm saying the purple areas are the vortices, and these are the magnetic impurities. I'm sorry?
You needed a fermion in order to...
So I can flip the spin with, through a magnetic tip, but that drives it into an excited state, so it kicks one fermion out of the ground state.
But it's a non-local...
It's a non-local... So these vortices that you have are very far apart, so there's no fermion tunneling between them, right?
That's right, mm-hmm.
So how can doing something over here affect what's going on over here?
So you
flip the spin, and then you have an extra excited fermion. So you're not in the ground state. So that fermion has to get over here in order for to affect.
That's right. So what I'm saying is that this is what happens when you flip the spin. So you have some. So first of all, for vortex one, you have some energy splitting because there's time reversal symmetry breaking here between the two Majorana modes. As you flip the spin, you get an energy crossing. You get a level crossing. And so what this means is that now the system will not be in its ground state. It will be in an excited state because it has pulled. So the ground state is now missing one. This thing here has extra fermion.
Is localized around the spin that you flip.
That's right. Yeah.
So how's it talking to the other spins?
So because.
I think you change the local magnetic field. The fermion parity doesn't change.
It's not parity changing the ground state.
It's just that you have to be in an excited state, which has a different fermion parity from the ground state.
There's no
fermion parity transfer.
If you're sitting looking at spin 4, you can't tell that anything happened to spin 1.
What we get is a classical correlation between them. It means if you compare two systems, they have different ground state energy because one of them must have an excitation.
Right, but everything is local, right? I mean, everything you can tell.
When you flip this spin, it won't lead to a non-local flip of that spin.
Right.
It's a correlation. It's a classical correlation. It means I consider these spins as classical, and I integrate my fermion to get ground state energy, and I find that this and this has different ground state energy, even if they are very far away.
Right. So this issue is a little subtle. So let me leave this if you want to discuss afterwards or look at the preprint, because it actually requires some details that I didn't want to really go into. So if we can discuss it afterwards, that would be, I think, better for the general audience. Okay. So just for completion, there's a 3D generalization of this time reversal invariant superconductor, and one example with an odd number of Majorana fermions is the helium 3B phase. So this system will have gapless Majorana fermions on the surface. The surface states are protected by time reversal symmetry. And this was also proposed by Rahul in his work in March, and then by what we've seen before by Furusaki, Ryu, Ludwig, and Schneider, and Katayev have also proposed that a three-dimensional version of the topological superconductor can exist, and it's classified by an integer classification, not a Z2 classification.
So helium-3B has been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sighting of any?
You know? Sure.
Yeah, there are signs that there are gapless surface modes.
Yeah. So I mean,
gapless surface modes is 81.
Yeah. I mean, so there are signs of surface states. Other than that, I think the experimental literature is unclear on what's going on about whether they're topological or not. But I think it's very difficult to do these type of experiments to really test the surface for this type of thing. But there is literature that indicates there could be or there could be surface modes there. Okay, so in this case, for the 3D case,
just like the historical question, maybe that anyone knows, but Volovic has been sort of talking about things along these lines for years and years.
He didn't realize Helium-3D is topological.
No, he realized it. He realized it, but he didn't consider a general theory of time reversal invariant superfluids. But he showed that there is this, the D vector and K space, he showed that you can integrate it in momentum space, and that gives you a Z invariant. That's actually similar to Ryu's, but it's somewhat different because it's not.
The question is whether he knows the surface.
No. He knew there were surface states too. He has worked it all out. Yeah.
Yes.
He did.
Yes. I mean, in the 1980s, there are theorists that worked out the surface state, both for clean surface and for diffusive
that,
surface.
I think that's the
Helium 3D.
That's the one from 81.
Yeah.
Well, Volovic also showed that there are edge states.
But some of these papers say you only get when it's not clean surface, you get the surface.
Yes,
so they didn't realize the universal nature of this.
Yeah, Alexei and I, we talked to him last summer, to Volovic, and we asked him specifically about this question, and he didn't pinpoint a specific experimental realization for himself in any particular literature that would clearly state there was a surface mode, which was topologically protected, even though Volovic had written down topological invariants for helium 3D in the past. It's a paper by Salomon.
Yeah, so I think the best we can say is that while the experimental literature doesn't rule out the surface modes, it's very unclear at the moment what's actually going on there. So if we did have a three-dimensional example of one of these topological superconductors, the zero modes on the point-like defects in 2D become zero modes on vortex rings in 3D. The thing is that for unlinked rings, there's no guarantees you'll have an exact zero mode because you have some size quantization. You have a physical ring. So something nice you can do is actually just link these two rings. Now both the red ring and the blue ring see some kind of flux through them, some kind of pi flux. And this will shift the momentum mode so that in the case of linked rings, you get an exact pair of Majorana zero modes.
Are these rings vortex loops?
Yes. Yeah. So the point defect in 2D becomes some kind of line defect in 3D. And so one other example you can think of is if you have three vortex rings looped, you see the green one links the rings twice, and so sees two pi flux. So this one doesn't have a zero mode, but these guys both see pi flux and will have one zero mode each. Okay, so now let me shift gears a little bit. Yes.
So if you have your 3D superconductor with a surface,
yes,
so that the vortices come out, and then I can imagine, turning them around.
Yes.
So the surface sort of connects with whether they're linked or not, right? So there's some braiding on the surface, which is related to whether the bulk vortex lines are.
Yeah, so you can imagine connecting. Yeah, you can imagine connecting strings to the two endpoints and braiding them in some way.
I see. It's gapless.
Since gapped, typically you don't have Majorana modes.
But somehow you think about I have a vortex ring with two ends both on the surface, and the other one, and then I wind them around, and then fills two vortices. Then you get a linked ring.
The surface is gapless.
Yeah,
yeah. So you
couldn't
do it
automatically.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. So now let me shift gears a little bit to talk about some sort of organizational structure of these proximity effects. So we've heard last week from Shinsei's work, Alexei's work, and our work with Xiaoliang and Shouchen about the classification of these systems, you have some sort of dimensional array of these interesting topological systems. So for the time reversal invariant insulators, you in 4 plus 1D, you have a 4D quantum Hall effect, and you have the strong topological insulator, the quantum spin Hall. For the time reversal invariant superconductor, you have helium 3B, the double P plus IP, P minus IP system, and then the double P wave wire. Then the superconductors without time reversal symmetry, you have the P plus IP system, the P wave wire, and then for insulators, you can have the integer quantum Hall effect, and for systems with particle hole symmetry, you can imagine having the sort of Sushi for Higger chain, which has complex zero modes at the end, exactly when you have particle hole symmetry. So one question is, how can we find these states? So we could just find the materials which exhibit each of these properties, and we've made some progress in that, or take a hint from Charlie and Liang's work and use the parent materials to sort of generate the other interesting states. So imagine if you have a three-dimensional ball of topological insulator, which on the surface you put two different materials, left and right side. So if the blue is a magnetic magnetization and the red is a minus magnetization, which you get is the interquantum Hall effect, the system will have a chiral edge state propagating along the domain wall here, along the screen area. If you have delta and minus delta, so you have a superconductor here and a superconductor with a pi phase shift here, what you'll find is you'll find a single or a helical Majorana edge motor propagating on the boundary here, and this will realize an emulated P plus IP, P minus IP system. And of course, the most interesting case is when you have a magnet here and a superconductor there, and in that case, you get a Majorana while or a chiral Majorana state, which emulates the P plus IP system. And you can also imagine different sort of geometries where if you have a torus, you actually have two domain walls. In this case, if you have M and minus M, you'll see a chiral state here and a chiral state there. We can also imagine doing the same thing in 2D. So in 2D, we can imagine the edge of quantum spin Hall. So we have some, it's not really showing up, but this is supposed to be a pink color here and a green or red and green here. And so in this case, if you put two magnetizations, this is sort of our work on the fractional charge in the system. This is a magnetization domain wall, and you get one fermion state, which can give you sort of an emulated Sushi-Frühiger chain. If you put delta and minus delta, you get the double P-wave wire. And if you put, like I said, the most interesting cases with an M term and a delta term here, you get a P-wave wire with a single Majorana bound state. So if you imagine doing the following thing, you can really see this looks like a wire configuration if you draw it on a sort of a disk of quantum spin Hall material. And then you cover the outside with a green material and a red material here. Then exactly on these two domain walls, you have something that looks like the two ends of a wire, and so this system sort of emulates these one-dimensional systems. So just for fun, let's do a higher-dimensional example. So if you take the 4D quantum Hall system, the surface is actually a three-dimensional surface given by some chiral fermion where A here runs from 1, 2, and 3, and sigma are the Pauli matrices. So here you only have one copy of the fermions, which means that you can't put a magnetization mass is available. So there's no magnetization term you can add to gap this fermion on the surface, but you can artificially double it to use and interpret it as a BDG Hamiltonian to reuse a superconducting mass term. And so in this case, you have no magnetization, but you can actually put a delta minus delta domain wall, and this will give you sort of the a pi phase shift in the deltas will give you a 2 plus 1D Majorana fermion, and this emulates the three-dimensional time-reversal invariant superconductor on the surface. Okay, and this, like I said, you can't, of course, we have no four-dimensional system, so this is just a sort of esoteric example, but it's a nice picture nonetheless. So one question we can ask really for fun is, can you get a higher-dimensional time-reversal breaking sort of a higher-dimensional chiral P-wave superconductor? So this would be most interesting because you could actually get these nice Majorana bound states. And the answer is, of course, yes, but there's a caveat that you can only get it in these higher-dimensional examples. So 10 plus 1, 18 plus 1, 26 plus 1, because the boundary, it turns out the Majorana Weyl representation only exists in 1 plus 1, 9 plus 1, 17 plus 1, and 25 plus 1. So you might imagine these are actually important for string theorists, and it turns out they're actually very, very important for string theorists. So these Majorana Weyl fermions have some very important meaning in higher G physics. But for our case, the 1 plus 1 case, which is the boundary of the 2D chiral superconductor, is the most interesting. So we can get other Majorana fermions, but to get the chiral Majorana fermions is much more difficult.
You pull the periodicity there, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you take 1 plus 1 and then add 8 to it. This shows that. So the reason this is because, first of all, you have to have the Weyl condition, which means you have to be in even dimensions so you can define a chirality. You also have to be able to combine that with the Majorana condition, which is a charge conjugation condition. It turns out that's only compatible every 8 dimensions. So it's just a property of sort of the Dirac matrices that it only works every 8 dimensions. Okay, so finally, let me conclude with just some open questions. So can similar constructions be used to modify the surface states of the time-reversal invariant superconductors and superfluids to get the time-reversal breaking superconducting states? So we've seen that we can put proximity effect stuff on the surface of a topological insulator to get interesting effects, but can you do the same thing with a topological superconductor? Another thing is we've seen this nice sort of picture. So can the mass terms, magnetization mass and the superconducting mass, be combined into a more symmetric structure? Like, can you form these into a sort of a more combine these into a higher symmetry thing so you can get more interesting defects. And the last question is, do these systems exactly emulate the lower dimensional system? So we've seen a lot of the properties match, but for example, does a quantum spin-all insulator with this M and delta domain walls have every property exactly the same as a 1D P-wave wire? The answer is probably yes, but we don't. There may be some interesting things to consider there as well to see if these systems actually completely emulate the higher dimensional system. That's it. Thank you.
So
several people mentioned, so Shouchen mentioned something like this, and Liang also mentioned something when we were discussing at Stanford. I mean, in principle, you have it depends on the dimension, right? Because in some dimensions, you only have one magnetization mass, in some, you have two magnetization masses, and so we haven't.
The stripe naturally is a hyperfine this super skin texture.
Right, yeah, I mean, that's right. So, I mean, in principle, you could unify them into some higher structure. We don't know if that's possible or not. We don't know if there's anything else. I mean, you can sort of guess an answer and figure out what the consequences would be, but we haven't really thought about it at all yet.
No, he's just pointing out in nature
already
actually happens.
Yeah.
Well, one way, I think the question is, like, usually when you do a pipe twist of the superconducting order parameter, pipe twist of the magnetization, it's natural to imagine it's a bosonic, solitonic configuration, right? But now we're doing a delta and N, so you may wonder what is that? So the most natural way to interpret this is a SO5 super spin pipe twist.
Right? That's right. So there may be some underlying structure there, but we haven't carefully thought it out yet.
So when we talked about SO5 theory, there's no natural reason why you put M and delta together, but now there's a very, very strong reason. These are the only ways to, for example, it wouldn't be natural to put charge density wave together with superconductivity, because charge density would not open. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now the topological phenomena is like a benefit term in your single model of SO5 or SO something.
So have you worked out when you have spin mixing in the P plus IPP minus, I believe, the fixed fermion number wave function? So the long wavelength. So we know P plus IP, it's, if I go to long wavelength, it's Fafian. And so if I have a spin conservation law, then it would be Fafian of Z for spin up and Fafian of Z star for spin down. But if I have these terms.
Yeah, so the answer is no. So all the work we've done has basically been with the mean field BDG Hamiltonian. So we've shown, or numerically we've shown, that adding the S-wave terms don't destroy the state. We haven't thought about what the proper many-body wave function is.
You can just project into the fixed electron number, and that's an easy thing.
That's a very interesting
that you can do.
We haven't done that yet, though.
And that's an explicit thing that you can mix the terms.
Must be a Jeff polynomial.
Could I ask you to go over that slide where you had the ball and you coded it red?
Yes, of course, yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, the torus picture is always more easy to think about, but the sphere is a nice example because you only have one state. So, okay. So the idea is that you have a ball of topological insulator, so inside the spherical shell, and on the surface you coat it with one material, and then you coat it with a different material here. And so in this case, if you have a ferromagnetic, if blue and red are both ferromagnets, but with the magnetization plus M on one side and flipped on the other side, then on this case, on this domain wall between the two materials, you will get a chiral state. And so this system will sort of emulate. So you get a chiral edge state on the domain wall, a one-dimensional propagating state. And so this system sort of emulates the integer quantum wall because there's a 1D chiral state there. If you put a system with a superconductor on both sides, but with a pi phase shift, so you have a delta and minus delta, so like the gap switch is sine, and then in this case, you'll get a pair of propagating Majorana modes, so a pair of propagating states, one in one direction, one in the other direction, along this system. And this is just the edge theory for this P plus IP, P minus IP superconductor that we proposed. And if you put a ferromagnet on the left side and a superconductor on the right side, and in this case it breaks terminal symmetry, and you will see that you will get just a single Majorana mode. This is basically the crux of Kane and Fuchs' work. In this case, this emulates the edge theory of a P plus IP system. I mean, so the thing is that you have two different materials there, so the edge theory, this boundary mode is the same, but you can't say which is the task, the P plus IP, which is the P minus IP. I mean, it's just the system itself is in some configuration where along this domain wall there's an edge state. So a lot of the properties are the same, but there could be things that are different, but I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, so it's time. Is it